Hi everyone, it's me, Sandy Cruz of Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. For years now, I've been bringing to you conversations about wellness from experts from all over the world. Whether it be suggestions in how you can age better, biohacking, alternative wellness, these are conversations to help you live your best life. I want to live a long, healthy, and vibrant life. Never mind all those stigmas that as we reach midlife and beyond, we're just going to shrivel up and die with some horrible disease. Always remember, balanced living works. I really look forward to this season. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. Today, I'm really excited to have yet another conversation about hormones. I have Dr. Bruce Doerr. He is the Senior Medical Advisor for BioT, and he's going to talk to us all about HRT or BHRT, bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. I'm pretty lucky because I get to speak and meet experts from all over the world who understand that all of these studies, or actually, I think it's probably one big main study that Dr. Bruce Doerr will get into, that say hormone replacement therapy, it actually causes cancer. I am here to spread the news that whatever this giant study is, and listen, I'm not a doctor, but I know enough. I actually am certified in endocrinology and hormones for nutritionists. I know enough to know that if it's done right, it's actually very healthy, and it's a healthy way to age. If I could count the number of times I've heard, oh, hormone replacement causes cancer, or I've been put on an antidepressant because I just feel down, or my skin is so dry, or I'm achy all over, or I have no more zest for life, or I have a problem with my bones. All of these things, these are only just a few complaints. There's so many. And it's not just women, it's guys too. It's really important to be optimized. And of course, Dr. Bruce Doerr is going to talk to us all about this, but I'm just giving my own personal opinion. One thing I have personally done, and again, this isn't medical advice, is I noticed one thing. It's really, really important to talk to your doctor about this. But I noticed that even though I had a period in December, right now, this is coming out in May. I'm 53. I was 53 in January. About mid-January, I start to have really, really shortened duration of sleep. I started to have a little bit of hot flashes at night, which disturbed my sleep. It wasn't so intense, but it was enough that by the first week of March, I actually worked with a doctor who understands that it's actually riskier for a woman to have all these symptoms for this 1 year mystery period that you're supposed to not have a period before you can go on bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. Well, I'm going to say all the research that I have personally done, I call bullshit. The fact is that sometimes it can get so intense that what do you think 1 year of no sleep, severe hot flashes, depression, aches and pains, bone loss, muscle loss, and, you know, fact is, it can actually affect your relationship with your partner too. So what do you think that 1 year does for a woman whenever she goes through menopause or she's close to menopause? Well, I'm going to say it's a very, very fast decline, which is why you should work with a doctor who works with you and understands you. Now, one thing with me that I have found is that it was too much for me to be on the estrogen 6 days a week with 1 day off. And I'm doing something personally, and again, not medical advice. I keep saying this because you need to speak with your doctor about this. I'm doing intuitive bioidentical hormone replacement therapy. And I haven't found anybody who does this. So, hey, that's my term, everyone. But anyway, what I'm doing is I'm muscle testing each night to ensure that I am taking the right dose for me, my body. This is pretty controversial. That's the facts. It's controversial. But it's not dangerous because I'm actually taking less than what the recommended dose is. Work with your doctor. I say that all the time because I am not one. But work with a doctor that listens to you so that you're on a dose where you feel good. And I feel great. And this is the key. And of course, test. You got to test. Otherwise, you're guessing. I'm going to leave the rest of the conversation for you to listen to with Dr. Bruce Dorr. But go follow me anywhere and everywhere you do social media. Just Sandy K Nutrition anywhere. Please rate, review, and subscribe to my podcast. It really, really helps me to keep getting amazing guests like Dr. Bruce Dorr. And definitely share this episode with anyone who you feel might benefit with this conversation, and find a doctor that works with you. It's really important for a woman or a guy to work with a doctor that doesn't gaslight you when you tell them your symptoms, or doesn't, let's just say, put so much structure into their treatment with you that you feel like a number. We're not numbers. We are not robots. It's just a very important conversation to have with a physician that is going to work with you. That's all I'm going to say. Now, with that, let's cut on through to this amazing interview with Dr. Bruce Dorr. Please don't forget to subscribe and rate and review with a few kind words. This helps me to keep bringing fabulous guests to you each and every week. Thanks so much. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Sandy K Nutrition, Health and Lifestyle Queen. My guest today is Dr. Bruce Dorr. He is certified by the American Board of Obstetrics and Gynecology in OBGYN and Female Pelvic Medicine and Reconstructive Surgery. He's a member of the American Urogynecology Society and the American Association of Gynecological Laparoscopics. Whoa, that's a mouthful. He became certified as a thank you. He became certified as a BioT medical practitioner in 2015 and provides hormone optimization with pellet therapy for both men and women. He has treated female patients referred to cardiologists for irregular heartbeats, endocrinologists for weight gain, and even marriage counselors for vaginal dryness and loss of libido. Effective treatments for these patients were not initially prescribed because changes in hormone levels were not identified as the root cause for their issues. So Today, we're going to talk all about menopause. We're going to even talk a little bit about some of the topical stuff that's coming out now and the New York Times article that came out recently about women being misled about menopause. It's huge news. And who better to speak to or speak with about this than Dr. Bruce Dorr? So with that, welcome.
You can speak to me, too.
Okay.
I think that's awesome. Huh?
I like speaking with you. How about that? It sounds better. So I am just so excited for this conversation because that article is almost like it was a springboard for our meeting.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And very much needed. It was just a welcome across all fronts when we hear about menopause. And even you may have seen it too, the Super Bowl, they even had a featured segment on vasomotor symptoms or symptoms of menopause that was in a 30-second commercial also. So women and their needs are definitely getting out there, which is very much a blessing.
Okay, well, my team was not on the Super Bowl in the Super Bowl. Oh. So, you know, I'm a Buffalo Bills fan over here. So.
Oh. Yeah, I think we were all hoping for the Buffalo Bills, but yeah, it didn't happen.
So I did miss that.
It kind of became America's team for a minute.
Yeah, I did miss the segment. But, you know, I have to ask you, what got you into this field that you're in right now?
Well, actually, I went into medical school to become a psychiatrist. But as I got further into the field, you know, I just found I was so drawn to the field of OBGYN because the medicine involved, the procedures that were involved, and the charm of the whole labor and delivery experience was just overwhelming to me. And to me, it was kind of what life was all about, and just felt that. And as I got into it, yes, I started to subspecialize in urogynecology and, all the stuff. It's kind of an evergreen area as far as OBGYN goes. We're either helping women get pregnant, helping them through their pregnancy, or helping them with all the stuff that happens after their babies.
Yeah.
It is really a blessing to be in the specialty. And, you know, I really didn't realize how lucky I was seeing women virtually my whole career until I started seeing men. They're a tougher crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think, you know, women are just, you know, they're unfortunately no stranger to medicine and therapies. And I think in general, much more open to my advice. And that's been the beauty of my career. Interestingly, the whole menopause emphasis, you know, I would see women with unfortunately very painful conditions, one called endometriosis, mm-hmm. and we would need to remove their ovaries sometimes at a very young age. Even as young as I had one lady so severe, she was 16 years old, mm-hmm. That I had to perform, and remove her ovaries. And I would see women that I would put into surgical menopause. And although their pain was gone, they went to this very dark area. And I had one patient specifically, she was 38, and her pain was gone, but she no longer wanted to have sex. She no longer wanted to work out. She was gaining weight. And she just said to me, you know, I just wish I wish I was in pain again and had my hormones back. And she started taking her husband's testosterone preparation, and I saw her as kind of a crazy level, 700. It's very high for a woman. I referred her to an endocrinologist, and the endocrinologist said, well, why would you do such a dangerous thing taking your husband's testosterone? And she said, well, I just felt better. I had better energy. I had better libido. I felt like I did before my surgery. And he says, well, I just don't understand. You're 38 years old. And she said, yes. He goes, well, how much longer do you think you're going to be having sex?
And, oh, wow.
I know. So this is what is happening when people see, you know, experts in hormones, that I would see my patients being treated like that. And that's how I got introduced to Bio-T and to learn more, to really be full service for my patients that need hormones at any age and their husbands.
Yeah. I mean, that unfortunately, I've heard all too many stories similar to that. And it's really unfortunate, but then there are physicians out there, and I always say that there's physicians out there that will work alongside you and help you to feel optimized, because life's too short. Life's too short to go through it feeling like you're going through it with no vitality. You know, like, it's just unfortunate. So talk to us about, you know, what, because there's always confusion. Like, what is menopause? Let's start with the very basics.
Right. Well, menopause, defined by the American College of OBGYNs, is the cessation of your periods for a year, usually combined with menopausal symptoms. And what's going on physiologically is that the ovaries stop making estrogen. And there's a time leading up to that total stop of estrogen is what's called perimenopause. And that's where, you know, some days pretty good estrogen production, some days not so good, some weeks pretty good, some not so good. And it's that roller coaster that can start, you know, a few years before, on average, a couple years before the periods totally stop. But some people start that as early as their late 30s or mid 40s. And so that up and down will cause irregular bleeding, which is a majority of the consults for women in their 40s seeing an OBGYN as irregular bleeding. And yes, many will address the bleeding, but they don't address the women's symptoms that are going on surrounding that. So with that hormone loss, then comes all the stuff that can either hurt us or kill us. So acceleration in risk for dementia, accelerations for risk of bone loss, for heart disease, for breast cancer, that all happens with that loss of estrogen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's a good time to talk about some of the symptoms, because you know, you and I both read that article, Women Have Been Misled About Menopause.
Yeah.
And I think it's there are a lot of pros and cons to it. And you know, I'm not a physician, but I know a lot about menopause. And I happen to be 53 years old. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm kind of getting through it pretty good. You know, I'm feeling good. And I'm feeling that I don't feel like I have a loss of vitality. I don't feel like I want to kill my husband every day. So, I mean, there you go.
Right.
These are all bonuses, right?
Well, you know, looking at you, Sandy, everybody's going to want to know your secret, because you look like you're about 20 years old.
And I'm not using a filter, I swear to God. No filter.
Oh, okay, good.
No filter. But you could see I get flushing. So there you go. There's a symptom right there.
Well, people accuse me of not using filters either, so that's just a problem. Yeah, but different story altogether.
So, you know, this article, they like the one thing from this article that really stuck in my mind, and I would love for you to talk more to this, is the brain lesions and the correlation to hot flashes. And the intensity, severity, frequency, that was like, I have to say, I knew a lot of what the science has been saying, but that one was huge. It just struck me like, oh, wow.
Well, you know, they're trying to put their finger on is what causes the hot flushes, what causes these vasomotor symptoms. And they're kind of coming down to, and it's also coming down to, what is the problem for some women that have irregular periods, a condition called polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Okay.
And that leads to irregular production of estrogen and progesterone balance that goes on, that can sometimes happen in that perimenopausal time period. But that is what happens with a signal that comes from an area in our brain called the hypothalamus. And that is what pushes a signal to our pituitary glands that then push the hormones to either our testicles or the ovaries. Is the thing that way too. So what they're getting at in that article is that area in the brain is is having dysfunction. And so these levels that then happen at the pituitary level are associated with night sweats, hot flushes, and those kind of things going on. And it's being brought to light because of a new drug that's coming out on the market. It's called an NK3 receptor antagonist. And it is, it basically is helping with a neurokinin. It's a brain chemical messenger that sends these messages to the pituitary that then activate the ovaries. And so they're finding that problems in that area of the brain is probably what's the bigger cause of vasomotor symptoms specifically. But we know that these lesions, especially related to Alzheimer's disease, it's a protein called beta amyloid. And there's also another one associated called the tau protein. And it's the accumulation or the presence of these that is kind of the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease.
Is that the plaque?
Yes, those are the plaques that go on, and they entangle the nerve fibers and these pathways that allow us to process things in our brains. And the things that help decrease beta amyloid deposition are sex hormones. So both estrogen and testosterone are known to decrease beta amyloid deposition. Now, in her article, she's saying that beta amyloid deposition is starting in women in the perimenopause. But, you know, I've talked to Alzheimer's researchers, and they've even seen beta amyloid deposits in fetuses.
Wow.
So, and we see that much more in the mid-30s or so when women start to lose their testosterone. And so that's also a problem. Low testosterone in both men and women is also associated with increase in plaques and brain and cognitive impairment.
Okay. So does this mean, you know, if somebody's just reading the article, who's not a physician like yourself or listening to the podcast, they're going to be like, oh my God, I have tons of hot flashes and I have them all the time and I have them every day and I have many and many and oh my God, I'm going to have dementia. I'm going to have Alzheimer's by the time I'm 60. So like, you know, people, it can cause a little bit of panic.
Oh yeah. Well, and they're, you know, panic and inflammatory statements sell. You know, when you look at benefits and health and doing the right things for our bodies and diet and exercise, that doesn't sell as much as, you know, a balloon over the Atlantic or, you know, anything that is inflammatory or reactionary is the deal. So I think the key is here is that if you're having symptoms, it's good to talk to somebody that these symptoms can be associated with problems long term. And it's not necessarily just vasomotor symptoms. When you look at a reanalysis, and I know we'll probably talk about it, of the WHI that every woman went off their hormones or majority of women went off their hormones.
Yeah.
When you look at a reanalysis, it's actually not necessarily just hot flushes or night sweats that caused long-term increase in cardiovascular disease or all-cause mortality. The biggest symptom that was associated with all-cause mortality was dizziness.
Oh.
So, you know, it's not just about night sweats or hot flushes. There's like 40, some people say there's as many as 100 different symptoms related to menopause, but there are much more significant symptoms that can be associated with things that can kill you, not just Alzheimer's disease.
Okay, so let's talk about the major ones then, Dr. Dorr. Let's talk about the major ones. We talked about hot flashes. What other ones should we really pay attention to?
Yes. Well, you know, and that was kind of your intro, you know, to me, is that as a urogynecologist, I work with a lot of certainly female pelvic disorders and incontinence. And so I would see women for their incontinence, but they had been to the endocrinologist, they had been to a cardiologist, they had been to a rheumatologist, because really the number one symptom of menopause is joint pain. And so, you know, women stopped exercising, they stopped walking the dog, and so that's really the number one symptom over night sweats. And people just attribute that to getting older. But really, it's the loss of the joints and the synovial fluid and the ligaments and the muscle loss that go on with the loss of hormones. But it can be irritability. It can be palpitations. It can be vaginal dryness. It can be many different things that people think, oh, yeah, maybe it's my diet or maybe it's, you know, something else. And nobody's wanting to talk about menopause. It's easier to talk to somebody about your heart racing than it is your vaginal dryness or those kind of things going on. And so, you know, the cardiologists don't want to deal with hormones, you know, and so that's what it comes down to is what is that root cause rather than the bandage on, you know, putting somebody on something that slows their heart rate down or putting them on Motrin or aspirin to cover their joint pain, you know, get to that root cause as far as what's really doing that. It's the functional medicine piece of this.
Yes. And, you know, it's so interesting because that happens in other parts of medicine too. And I have no thyroid, right? So I know a lot about thyroid. I studied it and I live it. And I think experiencing it, but seeing, you know, seeing a client from a nutritional perspective who comes back and says that their physician put them on anti-anxiety meds and then seeing that they're severely hyperthyroid, you know what I mean? It's kind of like that same idea of not looking at what's the root cause. And, you know, the fact of the matter is it's going to happen. Our hormones are going to decline, right? Like we kind of like, I can't be 30 forever. Right. So that's one fact that we have to face. So how I love that you mentioned lifestyle, because that was the other big piece that was not really talked about much in that article. And I was like, okay, there's a lot missing here because there's a lot we can do other than, you know, taking the medications, right?
Right. So when you look at diet and lifestyle, when you look at other areas of the world, like say, look at Japan, you know, their incidence of menopausal symptoms is significantly less than the average Canadian or American. And it's because of their diets that are rich in omega-3 fatty acids. So there are things and the precursors for our hormones and things that help our bodies and our brains nutrition-wise that help us feel better, to help with diet and exercise and things like that that go on, that can certainly mitigate the severity of our hormone loss. Mm-hmm. So yes, that is another key component. But the problem is, you know, they did a recent survey that 60% of OBGYNs, when women come in with menopausal complaints, prescribe an SSRI. They prescribe, you know, an antidepressant because that's easy and that can be handled in 5 or 10 minutes. Oh, you're having this. Let's put you on this drug. You know, I'll see you in 3 months. But to sit down and talk to somebody about what are you eating? How often are you exercising? You know, are you experiencing sexual dysfunction or things like that? Most people do not want to spend, really you need a good half hour to 45 minutes to talk to somebody about their life and their lifestyle, and it's much easier to put them on a drug. And many people, that's kind of what they want. They want a quick fix.
Yeah, I think we need to, as a society, get away from this whole quick fix, because just like what you do, you know, hormones, it's this beautiful symphony, right? And so you got to kind of play around with it. Like I myself, I've been on bioidentical progesterone for years now because that is what's helped with my sleep. I have no issues with anxiety. I have no issues with, you know, being overly hyper and nervous because I rhythmically take bioidentical progesterone. So maybe talk to us about that symphony of hormones.
Well, you know, just like you're hinting at, women will start to lose their progesterone production in their mid-30s. And that's when PMS starts to come into play. That's when we can start to see pregnancy loss, because progesterone is the major hormone of pregnancy. So we look at that when somebody's pregnant, but we don't necessarily equate that to negative symptoms that start happening in the mid-30s. And then, get even worse as they approach menopause and start losing that even more so. So I have many women that I'll put on cyclic progesterone, just like you're taking. You have to go low because everybody's different as far as what their right progesterone level is, what their right testosterone level is, what their right estrogen level is. And there are many people, and I can see this as I do blood tests, that there are some women that their brain will tell me it's their right estrogen dose with a level of 30. And for some women, it shuts off, or the signal is good at a level of 120. Wow. So that's why when you do a standard preparation available in my cupboard, you know, with a patch, a gel, a pill, a spray, is way too much for some people and way too little for others. So to have variability in dosing, it's a very individual thing for every patient as far as how much they need that can take them to too much or too little. So it's finding that mama bear porridge on each individual patient. And most people, you know, don't want to take the time to work with patients. Like you may know with thyroid, there's a broad range of where people sit in thyroid. Oh, yeah. And many people will say, your thyroid is normal. Well, what is normal? Is that an A student or is that a D student? So same thing goes for hormones. Hormones and, say, thyroid are things that we can control. I can't control my kids. I can't control North Korea. I can't control whatever is the deal that way too. But I can control what goes into my body or my patients' bodies, whether or not that's food or nutrition or these hormones. And so the things I can control, I want to be an A student in those. And that's where I try to take my patients, is to that best level that we can control.
I love that you say that, because, you know, there's a difference between being in the range and being optimized.
Right. So we do the same thing, whether or not that is with testosterone or estrogen. Progesterone tends to be a little bit less that way too, but certainly I do the same thing with my thyroid patients.
Okay, so we know progesterone is more that hormone that kind of makes us more chill. It helps us to sleep. It will help with anxiety. Did I miss anything with progesterone?
Well, it has, you know, a number of different functions. And, you know, when you look at estrogen or testosterone, there's over 400 different receptors for these hormones in our body. And they activate those processes, whether or not it's your hair, your joints, your skin, your nails, your fat. You know, I mean, these are activators all over your body. So it manifests itself in different ways depending on, you know, what we're doing and how our bodies are structured, both genetically and chemically.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, go ahead.
Oh, well, in general, so, you know, it helps some people more with their brains. It helps some people more with their joints. It helps some people more with their muscles or libido or things like that. So it's a combination of figuring out, you know, what people need, you know, on that hormonal scale.
And do you take, I'm sure you do, but I guess you would take into account blood work on top of lifestyle, on top of symptoms?
Yes. Yeah.
And would you say that the majority of women that come in to see you that are, say, my age, 53, they say that they have joint pain, would that automatically kind of set off a bell that, okay, estrogen, that's probably related to estrogen or
testosterone? You know, when you look at Dr. Rebecca Glazer, she is a breast cancer surgeon out of Wright State University in Ohio. She did a 10-year study looking at testosterone replacement only in women. And these were both premenopausal as well as menopausal women. And she had relief, you know, almost 90% in all of her menopausal patients just on testosterone alone.
Wow.
So it's not always just estrogen. It's the combination of estrogen and testosterone. But testosterone has this kind of juicing negative connotation that people are scared of it. They think of it as a male hormone. But women make 3 to 4 times more testosterone on a daily basis over estrogen. And so you can go far. It's the balance of all these things. And so for years, I would treat people with standard hormone replacement. You know, I'm kind of a good old boy. I was there before, you know, all the hormones kind of stopped in 2002, is the deal that way too. But, you know, I would put people on estradiol and they'd still have all their symptoms. They still have night sweats and hot flushes and all their menopausal symptoms. And it wasn't until I started doing testosterone replacement with my patients, they're like, this is how I used to feel. That was the missing piece for some, if not many, of my patients. So it's the balance of both estrogen, testosterone, and progesterone that many, many people don't even recognize testosterone replacement in women.
Okay. And so it's not like myself as a woman who's 53, really, I mean, I guess I might be concerned about getting those chin hairs or acne from taking testosterone. Like, we have to also be careful, like, and work with a physician that knows what they're doing.
Yeah, with any hormone, you need to do that. And so do I return people to that puberty stage? Yeah, to some degree, you can do that. There's a dual-edged sword to testosterone. And you can make women into very manly-looking women with the amount of testosterone. So the difference between a medicine and a poison is the dose. So it's about finding that right testosterone level. So women lose half of their testosterone by age 40. And so you'll see women who kind of crash after delivery and they're like, I have no libido. I have no energy. I'm not sleeping anymore. And they're still having regular cycles. They're only 38 or 40, but I draw their testosterones and it will be zero.
Oh, wow.
And some labs will say a normal testosterone in a woman is 0 to 35, but it's not normal at all. But people go off of lab reference ranges rather than really what is making the difference individually for these patients. So I see menopausal symptoms in women in their 20s, and it's not the loss of estrogen, it's the loss of testosterone.
Oh, so interesting. Because I know a lot of women, they're just afraid of that. But I know, you know, I'm familiar with Dutch tests and a few other functional tests. And yeah, we all have testosterone, people. It's important.
Right.
Okay, so let's maybe talk a little bit about, we have to mention some of the flawed studies that did such a huge disservice to so many women.
Right.
And
right.
Scared the pants off them, right?
Right, right. So, yeah, there were observational studies in the 90s, and they looked at women on hormone replacement and long-term, yeah, in general, they had better hearts and they functioned better. Mm. And so they said, well, let's really put the pen to the paper and see. And it started with the HERS trial, which is the hormone estrogen replacement study in the late 90s, and it showed that there was statistically no improvement in cardiac outcomes on women when you put horse urine estrogen into their bodies. And that became even more so, and the makers of Premarin, so the number one prescribed hormone and the number one best studied hormone ever, pregnant mare's urine, 30 different horse urine estrogens, none of them were meant to be inside women, when they then were studying that because they wanted to get an FDA approval to prevent heart disease. So they were going for gold, that they would then be, you know, prescribed by everybody. And unfortunately, when they looked initially at women that went on horse urine estrogen and a birth control pill type of progestin, so when you take estrogen, it can increase proliferation of the inner lining of the uterus or cause bleeding. So you have to take estrogen's counter hormone with it, progesterone. Progesterone is what's naturally meant to be in women's bodies, but they were using a chemically made medroxyprogesterone acetate that absorbs better and is cheaper. And so that's what they combined it with. And women that were taking the unnatural estrogens and the unnatural progesterone had an increased risk of heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer, and they stopped the study early. Mm-hmm. They, when the women had a hysterectomy and they didn't have to take the progestin, this medroxyprogesterone acetate, they continued that study. And that went for 8 years. But unfortunately, there was a crowd in the 60 to 90-year-old group that had an increased risk of blood clots. And so they stopped the study at that point.
Wow.
But, and so there's been many reanalysis of that. But I think what it comes down to, Sandy, and I think you are on board with me on this, don't put horse urine into your body, you know? Don't put birth control pill type of progestin in your body.
Yeah.
If you put back into your body the same thing that was meant to be there and you deliver it the right way, you don't have these risks of heart attack, stroke, and breast cancer. And, you know, in 2012, there was a big British Medical Journal article looking at bioidentical estrogen, 17-beta estradiol, and they even had an unnatural progesterone. They used norethindrone. It's in Britain, so they use different progestins over there as they deal that way, too. Those women had a 50% decreased risk of cardiovascular disease as they followed them. Mm-hmm. So it's about the type. So not all estrogen is the same. Not all progesterone is the same. Look at it like this. If you had two groups of people and you gave them both alcohol, one group, you know, after a couple of drinks of alcohol, were dancing around and felt great, and the others went blind and died. It's the differences in alcohol. One got ethanol, one got methanol.
Mm.
So not all alcohol is the same. Not all estrogen is the same. You want to put back into your body the same thing, not a similar thing. That's what makes the difference.
Yeah, that was such a great explanation, because I hear so many people who are like, whatever, I just went and got hormones, and they don't even know what they're putting in their bodies.
Right.
And I hear this regularly. And I, you know, because I almost feel like it's a bit of a curse, Dr. Dore, because I talk to too many physicians like yourself and experts. And I'm like, I know too much. I'm like, is it progestin or is it progesterone? There's a difference. Right. So the
women in the WHA that didn't get progesterone or progestin, they did great. And now when you look at them 20 years later, those women, even on horse urine estrogen, have a 30% persistent decreased risk of breast cancer.
Wow.
And they lived healthier. They had there's no increased risk of all-cause mortality or cardiovascular disease in that group, and now they're running a persistent decreased risk of breast cancer in the non-progestin group. It was the progestin in that study that was flawed and made the difference. So again, if you use progesterone, even with horse urine estrogen, you don't have those risks that go on. And all the lights come back on to your bone, to your brain, to your heart, and combined with testosterone decreases the risk of breast cancer.
So yeah, I like that you said all the lights come back on. Like, who doesn't want to age better and live with vitality until the day we're meant to end on this planet, right?
Right.
I'm with you.
So what good is it living longer if you're not living healthy as you live longer? And that's what hormones do. They allow that, you know, betterment of our brains, of our bones, of, you know, those kind of things that go on. You know, what good is it to live if you don't know that you're living, if you have dementia or Alzheimer's disease?
Yeah. So who are the people that are at risk? Who are the patients, or are there any patients that you have to handle very carefully?
Well, you know, if somebody tells me, you know, they take half a Benadryl and they pass out, okay, you don't have to prove to me that you're sensitive to medicines, you know? And so you start out low and you work your way up. And that's great for any patient because you don't know what their right level is. So titration dosing, and the beauty of what we do at BioT is that there's a whole computer model that can kick out where 90% of people hit the right dose. And so that's the beauty of palliative therapy and BioT. But you can do that with any drug that goes on. Certainly, you know, people with history, you have to be careful in the delivery of hormones. So we weren't meant to take hormones orally. When you take hormones orally, it goes through your liver, it revs up stuff in your liver that increase binding or problems, but it increases blood clots. So when you take hormones through your skin or in a pelleted form, even a history of a blood clot or a blood clot to the lung or anything like that, it's not a contraindication to hormone therapy. So really, you know, unless there is a condition like, say, breast cancer, there's certain types of brain cancers that are fed by estrogen, that's the only contraindication. So if there is a condition where a patient would be bettered by removing her ovaries, that's really the only contraindication to bioidentical hormone replacement therapy.
Okay. So what are your thoughts? And I don't know if you even do anything like this in your practice. It just kind of came to mind. You know how there's so many different things that you can take to redirect estrogens so that they actually metabolize down the healthy pathway, like DIM, diandylmethane. Yeah. Then there's sulforaphane. I take sulforaphane. I've been taking sulforaphane for a long time. Because I also know my genetics. I have an aunt who died of uterine cancer and a great aunt who died of uterine cancer. And so I'm very cognizant of what's happening with my estrogens. Do you think that those are good solutions for women who are worried about how they're metabolizing those estrogens or no?
So everybody that we put on hormone replacement, we put on DIM, sulforaphane,
beautiful
products.
Beautiful.
So, you don't know how people are genetically modeled with that phase two elimination of their hormones. And they can go down that beneficial antioxidant pathway of the 2-hydroxy versus the 4 or the 16-hydroxy. And that's where you're getting at with the Dutch testing, that you can actually look at that. But if you just put people on that, and I put all my men on that too, because same thing goes on with testosterone breakdown products and our estrogen that we break down as men. When you look at severity of, say, PMS symptoms, it's not estrogen or estradiol itself. It's the 2-hydroxyestrone that it breaks down into that gives women breast cysts and breast pain.
Yes.
And those sensitives that go on. So if anybody that goes on birth control pills with me, I recommend, it tends to be, my younger crowd in general, so they don't want to do supplements and things like that necessarily. But I put everybody, on DIM. We have a combination product out of 2 different companies that helps with, especially if they're on artificial estrogens or progestins in a birth control pill. But in general, yes, anybody on hormones goes on DIM with us.
Yeah, it just kind of makes sure it's doing the right thing in your body. That's the way I like to describe it. It's making sure it's not going wonky on you and going in a direction you don't want it to go in.
Right.
My parents are both still alive. My dad is going to be 86 in April. My mom will be 77. And she's like, well, my mom never had hormones. We never had hormones. Why do we need hormones? What's the point? And I'm like, well, mom, you can't say, first off, you didn't live as long back then, right?
Right.
And then secondly, I think that life was simpler. And, if you look at the way we live now, even cortisol can have an effect on all these other hormones. Like, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, when you look at our food supply, now versus, say, 1920, in an average bowl of spinach, it has a tenth of the dose of the nutritional content. So our farming, our soil, our things like that, things that we used to be able to replete our bodies with the precursors for hormones or things like that are not great in our food supply, is the deal that way too. Now, women have suffered with menopause for a long time, and there were preparations for menopause even in the late 1800s. There was pulverized cow ovaries that they used to give women.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah, that was in the late 1800s. I think it was 1880 or something like that is when Ovarin is the name of it came out. But when you look initially at menopausal therapies, when the physician death reference, so that is like this big compendium of drugs available, at least in America, came out in 1947, there were 53 different preparations from 23 different companies to help women with menopause. So menopause and symptoms of menopause and the nightmare symptoms that women had to live with have been around for a long period of time, especially as women started living longer, well into menopause is the deal. Certainly with the advent of modern obstetrics and getting women through the whole kind of nightmares that can happen obstetrically, women started living longer. And so that's why we're seeing, women, aging and needing their hormones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I'm on board. Okay, let's shift gears and talk a little bit about the Women in Workplace Survey. Talk to me a little bit. What is this? What was this survey all about? Give us the details.
Well, yeah, they took 1,000 women, aged 50 to 65. It was a study that came out through BioT in January. And they looked at them. ACOG is now saying there's 6,000 women a day entering menopause. You know, that is a lot of people. And in fact, that is, you know, from when I first went into practice in the early 1990s, that's roughly 3 to 4 fold more. But what they found was that many women are suffering in silence, that, you know, 20% of people never, it's 20% of the workforce, but 87% of women never bring this up with physicians, let alone people in their workplace. And women are quitting their jobs. Mm-hmm. And that was brought up in the New York Times article too, that, you know, women are leaving their jobs over how bad their symptoms are. They can't menstruate, or they feel like everybody sees that they're having hot flushes in the workplace and they're embarrassed over bringing it up. And over half of the practicing OBGYNs are after the WHI that women stopped all their hormones, so they never got any hormone training. So nobody is helping all of these women, you know, who are suffering silently, and they're leaving their jobs and they're not getting appropriate treatment or care, or they're going on other medicines that make them feel worse in many ways.
Wow. That, you know, it's just, maybe I won't even say this, but what I will say, because I have to also be careful what I say, because I have a great relationship with my team of physicians. I have to have an endocrinologist because I have no thyroid and I had thyroid cancer. I have my GP, I have my naturopath doctor. And, you know, it's interesting because I don't feel like I have the support I need with the way medicine is structured here. And it makes me sad, actually, when I think about this, because I'm fortunate that I'm in this industry. So I advocate for myself. And, you know, somebody's put a little comment in something that I posted about, I posted a bit of a response to that article in the New York Times. And someone said, you know, thank God for people like you, because I have a full-time job. I don't have the time to research this. And so I, you know, we're fortunate that we have a lot of women advocators now and physicians like yourself who take the time out of your busy practice to educate other women and their partners.
Right. Right. You know, I thought this would just be a couple people a month as I looked at hormone replacement and certainly pelleted hormone replacement. And it grew to 50 and it grew to 100. And now it's like 600 people a month.
Wow.
You know, that I'm seeing. There's such a need out there for this. And there's such a need of validating what people are feeling and the negative symptoms that they have, hormone loss in both women and men. And so, you know, she brought up how women are suffering, but there are many men who suffer,
totally,
you know, too.
Totally.
And their partners, women, suffer because their men are suffering. You know, I see so many women who, you know, I used to have a great sex life when my man was much more on board with everything. And so, you know, sometimes women's dysfunction is their partner's.
Oh, yes.
So it just led to many areas that I never saw my career going to.
Yeah, and here's the thing. I will always say lifestyle interventions help. They help. I do believe that there's a lot of things that you can take to minimize some of these symptoms, you know?
Sure.
And there's no studies backed by it because there's no pharmaceutical company to back up the funding for the studies, right? So I can speak through firsthand experience. I take a lot of different herbs and they help me. And I am the N of one because I don't have the money to do a giant study, right? But
and that's what we really need is a groundswell of people for wellness rather than treating illness. So
yes,
we wait until people get their heart attack. We wait until people have Alzheimer's, which is too late. You know, we wait till people have breast cancer. But could we put people on DIM? Could we put people on chaseberry or boron or black? Are things that help mitigate their symptoms and treat them to be well, you know, or hormone replacement that treats them and helps them be well rather than letting them get ill and then treating them. That's the medical system.
Yeah. Backtracking is not an easy thing to do. So this is why I'm always like, get your lifestyle in order. Maybe take a few herbs that you feel help and then get optimized hormonally. When you kind of set your baseline and go, okay, I've done everything I can do. I'm a healthy person. I'm going to go and see a physician like yourself and get myself some hormones. So
what is
BioT? Talk to us about what that is and what is pellet therapy? Because everyone talks about pellets in the U.S. and I'm Canadian, so I don't know as much about it.
Right, right. So BioT is a company that was founded over 10 years ago, and they are a educational and promotional company. And yes, they do educate in many different areas, but pellets and pelleted therapy is their focus. And what pellets are, they're like a little grain of rice that goes through a tiny little 3-millimeter incision, usually in the upper bottom, but we can put it really anywhere that people have fat. Sometimes it goes in the abdomen or flank or things like that. But it's basically the same hormones as that's in a patch or a gel or a spray or a pill. It's the same stuff. Like I talked about, not all estrogen is the same. This is the same stuff that is meant to be in your body. And a pellet, when a pellet goes in, your body surrounds it with capillaries, and then every pump of your heart, in comes the hormone. It's like giving you a brand new 18-year-old ovary back.
Ooh.
How much you need. So that's the art to this, is how much of an ovary you need back, whether with the estrogen and testosterone coming back into your system. The pellet lasts for about 3 to 4 months at a time, so it's about 3 times a year. But you don't forget it when you go vacationing in Kona. You don't forget it on a certain day, or you have your patch on for 2 weeks and you've forgotten it. So it is less maintenance, and it's the same hormone delivered the exact same way. So that's why I see my patients, 90% of the people that I see continue with that therapy. When I do other forums, it's only about 10 to 20%.
Okay. So if I want, I can't do that though. I can't fly to you and get that done. Can I? Just curious.
Well, BioT is getting close to 6,000 providers. More in America. We're seeing more and more Mexico rather than going Canadian so far. But they're expanding all over. And each year we're training a good 1,000 to 2,000 more. They just went public. And there's a lot of exciting stuff that's happening with the company now, starting in May. And so it's really getting the information about menopause out there. The beauty of pellets is that it's one of the most effective treatments as far as getting hormones in. It's just a matter of figuring out how much, that patient needs.
Okay. So I know this show is about menopause, but you treat men too. So andropause. So men can get pellets as well?
Yes, they can. You know, when you look at shots, when you look at some of the other therapies, that's not bioidentical. It's modified testosterone. And that increases risk of blood clots or negatives that go on. Just like horse urine in women, there are these negative things that are pushed by pharmaceuticals. Because it's against federal law, at least in America, to patent and to profit off of what is native to the human body. So drug companies come in, they want a uniquely patentable substance which can't be native to the human body. So they modify it to be similar, but not the same. So that's why we like pelleted therapy, is because it's the same testosterone. And again, it's like giving a brand new testicle to that guy. It's the same stuff delivered the same way, just like in women.
Okay, so there is such a thing as bioidentical testosterone as well. Right.
So, and then with, yes.
Okay. All right. Wow. Okay. I think, I don't know if there's anything that we didn't cover. We kind of covered a lot.
That's a lot of stuff, Annie.
I think so.
I have medical students and practitioners that can't follow me on a lot of that. So you were outstanding.
Oh, well, thank you. I do this every day. Okay, awesome. So let's summarize. Let's summarize what you can actually, by taking bioidentical hormone therapy at the right time and the right dose, it can help you age better. It can help to mitigate some of the risks as we age as women, such as heart disease, dementia, osteoporosis, and then there's the whole other, just the symptoms. Living with debilitating...
Quality of life is a big thing.
Yeah. I mean, we don't have to suffer, and I know some people will suffer for many years. So, yeah, let us know, where can we find you? It's a BioT. And if there's anything else you want to add and summarize, please do so, Dr. Dorr.
Yeah, BioT or BioT.com, BIOTE.com. And you can find a practitioner that's close to you in your area. We try and, you know, make this a very similar process. There are many different providers coming from different backgrounds. So there are people that are more functional medicine. There are people that are family medicine. There are people that are OBGYNs. So everybody comes about this from a little bit different angle. But the process and the pellets and the counseling should be somewhat similar in different areas. But, you know, you try and find that person that you can click with. And there should be, like I said, there's providers in basically every state and almost 6,000 providers nationwide.
That's amazing. And are they in Europe yet?
You know, I don't think so. I know Mexico and Canada, but I don't think they've expanded to Europe.
Okay, because I do have...
They've had pelleted therapy over in Europe, but I don't think, not BioT yet.
Okay, wonderful. All right, thank you so much for your time. This has been such a pleasure. Maybe we're going to have to do a show on andropause.
I'm happy to do it. Like, I see 25% men now. We see probably the most men out of all the BioT practices is the deal. We're a big practice.
Oh, well, you know what? I've gotten a few requests, so maybe we'll have to do that. Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time, Dr. Dorr.
Okay. Let me know how I can help, and it's been a sincere pleasure. Sandy, you're awesome.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to share it with someone you know might benefit. And always remember, when you rate, review, subscribe, you help to support my content and help me to keep going and bringing these conversations to you each and every week. Join me next week for a new topic, new guest, new exciting conversations to help you live your best life.